Fire the cannon! What's up, guys? This is Matt from Morven, Georgia. I tell you, what an exciting win that was. I was at the Gruden Ring of Honor enshrinement game down there on Monday Night Football against Atlanta. And, I mean, that was a special moment, and I love that guy. But, man, I love the Buccaneers winning way more. Gronk had a great game. The McLendon trade, that looks like that was paying off. That looks like a great decision. I'm sure he'll get more and more involved as time goes by. Man, what about that Tom Brady deep ball? Dropped it in the basket for old Scotty Miller. Love seeing that play. That ought to shut some haters up right there. I like seeing Godwin get back in the end zone. That's awesome. Hey, and that was awesome to see Winfield get his first career pick. But, and I'll tell you something else that's great. We're not talking about Buccaneers kicking. Isn't that a wonderful thing? I think so. But few opportunities from the game. Devin White is my boy. He's probably my favorite Bucs player right now. And as much as he's an absolute manimal in the run game and tackling and hard hits, he's got a lot of work to do in coverage. It looked like he got burned several times tonight. I'm sure he'll get there, though. He seems to be the leader for this defense for the future. But he got bit by the dumb penalty bug again in the third quarter. That was very frustrating, but we got over that for the victory. And we had some more frustrating play calling in the third quarter, but things worked out. I was able to get past that and move on. But, I'm going to have to buy some stock in Reese's, I think, because Troy's two little brothers have caught on to the touchdown treat thing. So I'm giving out Reese's like it's going out of style. It costs me about $12 a game, but, hey, I love it. One more thing. Go Rays. Hope they can pull this off in this World Series. But as always, go Bucs.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucs podcast brought to you by Pepsi. This football season will be different and Pepsi's here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. I am James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucsNation.com, and make sure you follow along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JYarko_Bucks, at DHarrison82, and at Bucs_Nation. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers advance to 5-2, maintaining their spot in first place of the NFC South with a 45-20 win over the Las Vegas Raiders. Recap, analysis, and the best and worst from week 7. And now, your Tampa Bay Buccaneers lead story from James Yarko and David Harrison of Locked On Bucs.
Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers received the ball first this Sunday to start the game and promptly went 3-and-out, allowing the Las Vegas Raiders the opportunity to put the first point of the game on the board, taking a 7-0 lead following a 21-yard pass from Derek Carr to wide receiver Nelson Agholor. The Bucs answered back on their following possession, though, and tied the game up on the back of 28 yards rushing from running back Ronald Jones and a 28-yard pass from Brady to tight end Rob Gronkowski, setting up Tampa Bay's first score of the game.
Trying to cash in. Sneak from Brady, and he'll power it home for the touchdown. Did that in week 1. His first Tampa Bay score was a rushing touchdown against the Saints. He gets his second of the year, and the Bucs answer back.
On the Raiders' second possession of the game, John Gruden dialed up a fake punt on 4th-and-short from his own 34-yard line, converting and eventually leading to a Las Vegas field goal to retake the lead in the waning moments of the first quarter. In the second quarter, it was all Buccaneers as the Raiders punted twice, while Brady led his team on 2 touchdown-producing drives in 3 tries. The first capped off with a 5-yard touchdown pass to Gronk, while the second one sounded like this.
It'd be huge for the Raiders to get a stop. Brady, deep shot. To the end zone for Miller, and it is caught for a touchdown! Miller and Lawson battling again. Lawson got the best of him last time. This time, Scotty Miller wins it for 6.
thus making the score at halftime 21-10 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers leading the Las Vegas Raiders.
Coming out in the second half, the Buccaneers defense forced a quick punt from the Las Vegas Raiders, and they were able to turn the following possession into 3 points off the leg of kicker Ryan Succop, who's quietly having a very good season. It was then that the Raiders began to gain some momentum. On 3rd and 7, the Buccaneers intercepted a pass from Derek Carr, but it was negated by an offsides penalty from Buccaneers outside linebacker Shaq Barrett. On the very next play, the Buccaneers were flagged for defensive holding, giving the Raiders a first down. Just 3 plays later, the Raiders were in the end zone to make it 24-17. The Buccaneers offense answered by going 3 and out, and the Raiders were flying high. They came away with just a field goal on that ensuing possession, scoring 10 unanswered points to cut the lead to 24-20. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers offense, though, found a way to answer, marching 67 yards in just 11 plays, capped off by a touchdown reception from wide receiver Chris Godwin.
Brady looking for Godwin, and it is Holden for the touchdown. A clutch score past the halfway point of the fourth for Chris Godwin and the Bucs.
It was the very next snap for the Raiders offense, where rookie safety Antoine Winfield Jr. came up with his first career interception, setting the Bucs up with 1st and 10 from the 24-yard line.
Big drive for Carr and the Raiders. And it's off the hands of Aguilar and taken away by Antoine Winfield. First career interception for the outstanding rookie, and he takes it to the 24-yard line.
Just 2 plays later, running back Ronald Jones got in the end zone, giving the Buccaneers 2 touchdowns in 42 seconds and essentially sealing the victory for Tampa Bay. They would tack on one more score, courtesy of rookie receiver Tyler Johnson, and the Bucs would go on to win their 5th game of the season, beating the Las Vegas Raiders 45-20. Coming up next, we are going to go over some of our pregame conversations and put some 2020 lenses on those, which should be a fun conversation. But first, a shout out to our friends over at Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi's here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Once again, during this Bucs Raiders game, I was sitting down with my meat and cheese tray, had some good and hot Mike Sells, washing it down with a Pepsi, and it was outstanding. Pepsi is a refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. Segment 2 of the Locked On Bucs podcast coming up next, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, boys? Looking forward to celebrating another victory Monday here. Love seeing it. I got to know, James, what kind of black magic did you tap into to predict Antoine Winfield Jr. will get his first career interception? Because whatever it is, I went in on that. Great game. Love to see all the receivers getting involved. Brady just going out there. Everybody's saying he had nothing left on his arm, and he's throwing 40-plus passes in a game, just shy of 400 yards. Yes, please. Love seeing Rojo get in the end zone. Love seeing Scotty Miller with that dime from Brady. Godwin getting in the end zone, although as a fantasy owner of Godwin, really wish he could have gotten that second one in the fourth quarter. Just, oh, come on, refs, give him the A for effort there. One thing I did notice, though, I'm not sure if you guys caught it. So first quarter, I think it was, Rojo had a dump pass that he just dropped that if he caught, he still would have been running. And then you didn't really see him much at all until the fourth quarter again. So do you guys think that was part of the plan, just to have him out? Or do you think that, you know, that was kind of a statement like, dude, you've got to catch the ball? I mean, that's really the biggest thing lacking from Rojo's game is receiving. So, yeah, again, love the game. Love seeing it. Wish our defensive front could have gotten a little more pressure against, you know, backups. But, hey, you know, they did a great job for what it was. So, all right, guys, catch you later. Go Bucs.
Back here now, Victory Monday at the Locked On Bucs podcast, following the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win in Las Vegas over John Gruden. and those Las Vegas Raiders. And here in segment two, James and I are going to recap a little bit of what we talked about last week, go over our key matchup predictions, our bold predictions, and just see how accurate or how inaccurate we were about this game, James. And let's start with key matchups. I'll start off with my key matchup, and that, of course, was rookie wide receiver Henry Ruggs III versus that Buccaneers defense, and obviously that secondary, and then how the pass rush was going to impact a quarterback like Derek Carr. And look, James, Derek Carr did complete 24 of 36 passes for 284 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. If I'm correct, and I believe I am, the first time that Derek Carr in the 2020 NFL season has had under a 100 quarterback rating, according to NFL stats, 97.5 is his final quarterback rating for this game. Nelson Agholor actually led the team in receptions and targets. Well, tied for targets with Derek Waller, nine apiece. And then Agholor came down with five catches, one behind Waller, but for 107 yards leading the team there. And then a touchdown and a long, of course, a 44, two long passes connected with Nelson Agholor. Henry Ruggs, the third, targeted himself three times, had two catches, 35 yards. So on the stat sheet, Henry Ruggs, the third, really didn't have that much production. But James, if you remember that conversation from Friday, I mentioned that it's not necessarily the fact that he can produce or how much he produces. We did see against Kansas City Chiefs, he had 100 plus yards, two catches and a score. So the possibility for Ruggs to be able to do things on the field obviously exists, but just the fact that he's on the field, stretches the defense out, opens things up like that. How would this defense respond to that? How would this young secondary respond to being stretched out? I think in a way, honestly, that they haven't had to protect the entire field all season long. I can't think back to an opponent and say they had someone as electric and as big of a home run hitter as Henry Ruggs III was. And I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you pointed out in the crossover episode what a key player Ruggs was for this Raiders offense. And yeah, I thought they did a phenomenal job. The broadcast team even pointed out the fact that Jamel Dean was running stride for stride with him at one point. Yeah, it was the right game plan yet again by Todd Bowles and this defense to, you know, focus on stopping the run game. Josh Jacobs again had a bad day. But Henry Ruggs, as you pointed out, was the key to everything, and they really held him in check quite a bit. Taking a look at my key matchup, of course, I made this key matchup before we knew the status of the entire offensive line for the Las Vegas Raiders, but we knew they were going to be minus Trent Brown, and mine was the Buccaneers front seven against that Raiders offensive line. Front seven came away with three sacks, three tackles for loss, five quarterback hits, and David, I lost count of how many uncalled holding penalties that there were. I saw somebody say on Twitter that maybe they just felt bad for the Raiders offensive line, and so they were letting them get away with a little bit of holding. I think I saw Golston held at least four separate times when he was trying to get to Derek Carr. So overall, a pretty decent day for the front seven. They did have four of their five starters playing in this game. One of them was ejected for a knee to the lower back of William Golston during a little bit of a scrum there in the second half, but not the dominant performance I was hoping to see. You had the issue with Shaq Barrett jumping offside, negating a interception by safety Mike Edwards, but I can't say it was a bad performance. I can't say it was a disappointing performance. I just expected a little bit more out of the Buccaneers front seven. The way they manhandled the Green Bay Packers, I expected them to be a little bit more dominant in this game, especially with the Raiders missing Trent Brown. But overall, a pretty decent performance by the front seven.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not the most dominant performance. I know a lot of people were coming into this game saying, you know, they're already without Richie Incognito, and then they lost Trent Brown, and then the inability to practice all week. I know that was a big point in our conversation, James, you and I, and then with your boy Q, and I listened to some of his episodes as the week went on, and that's something that he was kind of harping on. And honestly, Q, you know, from everything that I heard coming out of him, honestly, he kind of looks like he wants the Raiders to maybe release Trent Brown for conduct detrimental to the team because of his carelessness coming in, not just catching the virus. I mean, we don't know necessarily. I don't know anyway how he caught the virus per se, but you know, the fact that he's walking around the team facility, not following the rules, not following the guidelines again, you know, whatever anybody thinks about Corona virus and COVID-19, all that stuff, the rules are the rules. And he accepted the rules when he decided to play this season. So he needs to follow them. But because he didn't follow them, you know, all of his teammates are now out of practice. And I mean, I don't know how big of an impact it had on this game at the end of the day. They look like they held their own for the most part, but yeah, three sacks to Derek Carr. I think a lot of people were expecting at least five, you know, or hoping for at least five, but then Devin White comes in there for three. I think the fact that an off-ball linebacker is when we got all three of the sacks kind of shows that lack of preparation ability, because, you know, it's one thing for an offensive lineman to go there and line up against, you know, Raheem Nunez, Rochez, Will Golston, Ndamukong Suh, and defend against edge rushers like Shaquille Barrett and JPP. They've got all kinds of film. They've got all kinds of experience doing those kinds of things. But there's not a duo of off-ball linebackers that can do the things that Levante David and Devin White do. And I think that's the important part of preparation during the week, of getting some of those practice squad guys, or maybe finding an athlete on your own defense who can maybe come in there and mimic some of those things and mimic some of those looks, so that as an offensive line, you get used to communicating and adjusting and sliding when you need to and reacting. And I think that's maybe where that stands out the most, is the fact that an off-ball linebacker got those three sacks. Moving over to bold predictions, Antoine Winfield Jr. was part of my bold prediction. I predicted he would get his first interception. Of course, I also predicted that he would take it back for an interception, and then I did predict that an off-ball linebacker would get a takeaway. Listen, you can argue with me all you want. Three sacks from Devin White, I'm going to accumulate all of those into a takeaway, because I think three sacks from one player can count as at least taking one drive's worth of momentum, yardage, and ability. Stop. Don't even interrupt me yet. From the Raiders offense. And then Antoine Winfield Jr., of course, getting his first interception. I love it. Didn't take it back for the pick six, so I don't win my bold prediction anyway. But I'm going to call it a close loss, not as big a loss as maybe it looks on paper.
See, I was going to jump in and help your case.
Oh, okay. I'm not used to that. So I'm sorry I cut you off from cutting me off, actually. So go ahead, yeah. Good sir.
Well, you have to remember that one of Devin White's sacks was on fourth down, which theoretically was a turnover on downs, meaning it was a takeaway for the defense.
I will claim that. So I got 80%, 80%, I think, you know what I mean, of my bold prediction correct. So I mean, that's a low B. You know, we can get a degree with that. So we're good.
I mean, we'll say that your bold prediction was about as close as mine. You know, we were both off by just a tad. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair. Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely fair. Because it helps me.
Of course, my bold prediction was that for the first time this season, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Rob Gronkowski were all going to get into the end zone. Godwin got in. Gronk got in. Tyler Johnson got in. Scotty Miller got in. Ronald Jones got in. No Mike Evans. In fact, Mike Evans had a rough go of it. Not a lot of targets. He did draw two defensive pass interference penalties, did end up with two receptions. I was really hoping for that garbage time score by Mike Evans to really help my bold prediction hit yet again, even though I'm facing Mike Evans in fantasy football. But I think we need to really start taking a look at how serious is this Mike Evans injury. You take a look at the move to bring in Antonio Brown, and then you watch Mike Evans on Sunday, and he was having a lot of trouble getting separation against these Raiders defenders. And I know they were bringing some coverage over top to really try to eliminate Mike Evans from this game. It's one of those pick your poison situations that we've talked about all year long, that you could take Mike Evans out of the game. That's still going to leave Gronk. That's still going to leave Godwin. Now you got Scotty Miller involved. You're getting Tyler Johnson involved. But I think this Mike Evans' injury might be a little bit worse than what they are letting on, because he does not look like his normal self. And he got a little bit frustrated during the game. I can understand it. I don't know if it was from lack of targets or just not being himself, but you can see it starting to wear on Evans a little bit. And David, when Chris Godwin is in the game, Mike Evans just isn't the guy that Brady is targeting to move the ball, move the sticks, and get in the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, he's not getting a lot of targets, but he's definitely getting a lot of attention and a lot of looks. And I think that Mark Schlereth during the television broadcast did a really good job on, I think it was the pass to Scotty Miller, did a really good job of kind of illustrating and showing everybody that, look, you know, here's Tom dropping back, you know, for the pass, and he's eyeballing Mike Evans in that right side of the offensive formation and drawing that Raiders safety over to that side, because he is Mike Evans. Whether he's injured or not, he's on the field. He's Mike Evans. You have to account for him as a Raiders defense. And then once that safety gets far enough over towards the hashes, to give him room, he switches over to left real quick, which was probably his entire intention the entire time. And then drops a dime into the breadbasket for, I believe it was Scotty Miller. Either way, whatever it was, it just kind of shows the importance of Mike Evans being on the field. And listen, I mean, again, we don't know from outside looking in just how serious that injury is. But what we've been saying, that Mike Evans hasn't been healthy all season long. I mean, going back to the New Orleans Saints game in week one, there was some concern that he may not be able to go due to a hamstring injury. And I don't know if it's that hamstring specifically or something else, or I know he injured his ankle as well later on. I mean, he's having a rough season, man, and you got to feel for him because, listen, this is no shade to anybody else, okay, but this is the best quarterback Mike Evans has ever played with, and that's, you know, that's an easy thing to say. It's Tom Brady, and looking at Tom Brady this year, yeah, there was some rust earlier in the season, and they're having to get to know each other, and there's some injuries, and there was some issues with the offensive line during the Chicago game especially, but this is the Tom Brady that, you know, everybody kind of hoped that they were going to get. And it's finally all kind of sinking in, and Tom is having to look at the wristband a little less and less each week, and it's all kind of falling in place, and Scotty Miller's getting healthy, Chris Godwin's coming back, and just Mike is just out there, man, doing everything he can, and you just kind of feel bad for him. But at the same time, everybody on Twitter who says that Mike Evans is more concerned about team wins than his own personal stats are 100% right. That's who Mike Evans represents himself as, and that's who everybody, you know, that I know anyway, knows him to be. So I'm sure he's happy with the win, but man, you know, he wishes he could come out there and put some more numbers on the board for his team, not for himself. And James, I mean, if it is that bad, I wouldn't be surprised if AB comes in and once he can get in sync, you know, maybe the week before their bye, they go ahead and shut down Mike for an extra week, give him that extra rest so they can have him for that stretch run into the playoffs. Speaking about the rest of the season, this entire season so far, James has had the better of me in bold predictions as far as success rates are concerned. So I might have to bring mine down from ghost pepper level to James's spicy Cheeto level to keep up. But I'll tell you what I don't have to worry about, and that is our relationship with Built Bar. Listen, don't hit the skip button if you've heard this whole bunch, because we've got something new to announce at the end of this ad segment here. If you're a regular listener, then you already know this, but if you're new to the show, Built Bars are the healthiest and tastiest protein bar on the market. They're great for the health-conscious person. If you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in delicious treat, this is for you. They're low in calories, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for the keto diet. And they've got all kinds of delicious flavors. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, coconut almond, raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, banana bread, mint brownie, salted caramel, double chocolate, orange, toffee almond, coconut, peanut butter, brownie. You will find a flavor for you. These bars are 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew. Think Three Musketeer-ish type of texture. On October 27th, this is the new part for all of our regular listeners, they're launching their all-new Built Bites. That's right. So now the best-tasting protein bar is going to be even more convenient in bite-sized portions to allow you even more ways to customize how this company can fit into your daily routine the way they have fit into mine. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Again, that's promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Segment 3 of the Locked On Bucks podcast coming up next. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, it's Jacob from South Carolina. I just watched another Tampa Bay win. And let me tell you, we are on a roll. Full steam ahead. Let's go Bucks. That was complete game. Defense showed up. Antoine Winfield got his first interception. I mean, it's crazy stat. I was hoping we'd get 48-20 to make it close to the Super Bowl score, but hey, we got close enough. Just wanted to call in and give my appreciation to the Bucks, and one hell of a game we played. Go Bucks.
Wrapping things up here on a Victory Monday edition of the Locked On Bucks podcast. And David, it's time to get into best and worst of the week. And I'm going to kick things off with my best. And I know it's kind of cheesy. I know it's kind of low-hanging fruit. But I got to go with Tom Brady. 369 passing yards, 5 total touchdowns, 4 through the air, 1 on the ground. He is now second all time in 300 plus yard passing performances with 94, for his career. He is now the all-time leader in passing touchdowns. He passed Drew Brees with 559 for his career. Just an absolutely outstanding game from Tom Brady. He missed a couple of receivers that he probably should have hit. He missed Gronk on an overthrow on that very first drive. Missed Mike Evans, who was wide open despite the defensive pass interference on that play. But overall, I mean, Brady looks better and better by the week. This team is really firing on all cylinders, and you have to look to Tom Brady for how he has that offense just working so efficiently right now.
Yeah, he's certainly looking like he's probably going to be the next Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback to go into the Hall of Fame. So that's good news. Since you decided to start off with your best, I'm going to switch over to my worst. And for me, the worst has got to be at least the early Tampa Bay Buccaneers pass defense. And I'm talking about behind the pass rush, of course, not just the pass rush itself, and more specifically, the over routes. And listen, James, you know this already. Our listeners, those of you who listen and read over at BucsNation.com don't know this, but I had a little bit of a plumbing-related issue this weekend on the day where I was supposed to write my Know Your Enemy piece, which was going to be on Henry Ruggs III. And the over routes is something I was going to highlight in that post extensively, which it makes it a little bit more frustrating that I didn't get to write it, because as I'm seeing the Raiders employ these over routes, not necessarily with Henry Ruggs, but seeing them employ these over routes on this Buccaneers defense, I'm thinking, yep, this is exactly what I was looking for, exactly what I expected John Gruden to come out here and do. And I'm sure to a certain extent, so did Todd Bowles. I'm not a smarter defensive mind than Todd Bowles is by any means. What I think we saw, and one of our callers kind of touched on it with Devin White and his pass coverage, it's something, James, if you remember going back to last year, I talked to you guys about Devin White and pass coverage. I talked about during training camp throughout the season, even on the show a couple times. You know, we didn't harp on it too much. He's a rookie and he was making a lot of plays anyway. And that's how he is today. So we're really kind of nitpicking here. But Devin White, one of the biggest things that draws people to him is his ability to click and close. And you saw that during this game on that brutal hit he put on Derek Carr there towards the end of the game, that fourth down conversion, that sack you were talking about earlier in today's episode. As soon as he recognizes a play, that dude has the ability to close on that play with the quickness. Sometimes I wonder if he just doesn't trust his own closing ability sometimes when he drops into pass coverage, or if he's just so anxious to try to come up and make a play on a scrambling quarterback or maybe on a short route. He's just filled with such anticipation trying to make that play in front of him that it kind of tethers him to the line of scrimmage a little bit more than it should. Want to see Devin White get a little bit deeper in that drop, especially when he's got that middle zone drop, to kind of prevent some of those over routes getting over from him. So kudos to John Gruden and his staff for seeing it early, recognize it, exploiting it. Now we'll have to go back to the all 22 and see just what happened, because they stopped going to it, or they weren't as successful executing it later on in the game. So I don't know if maybe Todd got into Devin's ear and said, "Hey, get deeper, young fella," or what happened there. Have to look at the all 22, because Fox NFL is not going to show middle of the field coverage when there's nothing happening there. So that's probably going to be my worst, but again, with the caveat of the adjustment that happened really after the first two drives that the Raiders had was amazing.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of your worst, my worst for the game was Sean Murphy bunting. This guy, he's just not looking as crisp or as solid as he was down the stretch in 2019. Had a critical penalty that gave the Raiders a first down. They would go on to score on that drive. He was getting beat just about every time. I mean, there would be an open receiver, Derek Carr would hit him, and all of a sudden you realize, oh, that was Sean Murphy Bunting's guy. It makes me wonder how much longer the Bucs are going to allow him to be the corner opposite of Carlton Davis before they finally move him off the field and leave Jamel Dean out there in a much larger role. So I'm really disappointed from what I've seen out of Sean Murphy Bunting through 7 weeks this year. It doesn't seem to be getting any better, and something needs to happen to get it to click for him. As well as he played last year, I don't understand what has happened that has caused him to be such a liability for this Buccaneers defense.
Yeah, I think we were all kind of expecting a little bit better out of SMB coming into year two. But I mean, at the same time, when you're in a young group of guys that's excelling at such a high rate, such an unusual rate for such, they're the youngest secondary in the National Football League. They should not be playing as well as they are. Someone's got to be the least of the best. You know what I'm saying? Like when you're in a class, when you're in an advanced placement class, someone's got to be the kid with the lowest GPA. So I almost wonder if Sean Murphy Bunting isn't the lowest kid in the AP class, if that makes sense. So he's still in the AP class, just kind of sitting there. So I almost wonder that a little bit myself, but yeah, something I've been noticing as well too. And I really hope they actually don't do that anytime soon. I hope they give SMB as much tutelage, as much mentorship, as much opportunity to prove himself, because I really like the role that Jamel Dean has. And I really just, it's almost like fixing something that doesn't need to be fixed. I don't want to see them get drastic with it and then mess it up, you know, mess up the good thing they've got going. So I might be overthinking that a little bit. So my best real quick, it's really going to be simple. I want to go to the defensive side because you went with Tom Brady, but I got to go with Scooter. I got to go with Scotty Miller. 9 targets, 6 catches, 109 yards and a touchdown. Dude finally looks healthy again. I mean, this guy, like, not only is he fast, not only does he get off the line, not only does he get behind the defense, but this guy makes some really incredible catches. I mean, some of these catches that he comes down with falling to the ground or has a defender draped all over him, especially a defender like Trayvon Mullen. Like, Trayvon Mullen's arms, I think, are as tall as Scotty Miller is completely. You know what I mean? Like, but the ability for Scotty to run the field, track where he's at in the field, track the ball, deal with a guy like Trayvon Mullen and some of these other defenders that he's had against him and still bring down these passes, it's just a great thing. And then a hat tip, of course, to one of our favorite guests on this show, Scott Smith, senior writer and editor over at Buccaneers.com, for calling it before the season even started. Scotty Miller, I mean, he's emerging on this team. Again, 2 weeks of really little to no production because of that injury, but he looks like he's back. He looks like he's better than ever.
The pride of Northern Ohio out of Bowling Green State University. And yeah, I intentionally skipped out on taking Scotty Miller because I knew how much you would want to talk about him. I assumed that was going to be your best, which is why I went with Brady.
I appreciate it. Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's right. Speaking of teamwork, there will be none of that tomorrow because David will have night off. So I will be coming back to you solo tomorrow, taking more of your voicemails. Thank you to Matt, Jacob, and the caller that didn't identify himself, so we don't know who to thank on that one, for your voicemails here. We will have more of those coming up tomorrow. Kevin, we did get yours too. We are going to address that on Tuesday when we will have a very, very special guest. Until then, please check out everything going on over at BucksNation.com. Send us your voicemails to 813-444-5841. Follow along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JArco_Bucks, at DHarrison82, and at Bucks_Nation. It's another Victory Monday, people. Embrace it. Love it. Walk into work like you own the place because you're a Buccaneers fan and they are in first place in the NFC South. Hope you all have an absolutely outstanding day. Stay safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, be good to each other. And thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.